So today I continue the discussion and the introduction to renormalization theory. So I hope to be able to treat in a more proper way renormalization for phi 4. Or phi 4 at one loop order. We started to discuss that. So we started to discuss this in the case of the fact that there are radiative corrections to the mass. So you have corrections to the mass of the theory, of the particle of the theory. We'll see that there are corrections also to the coupling constant, coupling parameter. And so I'm going to treat that today in a simple case of a theory which is massless. That's both because it's a simplification, but also because it's an important case, because the main feature of renormalization are already contained in a massless theory. And I hope I'll have time to start to discuss the issue, well, one of the main features of renormalization, which is that the definition of the parameters depends on the scale at which you consider the theory. So I'm going to discuss the issue of a renormalization scale. I'm going to explain what this is. And first feature of renormalization group, what's called consequent on that, which is a kind of, there is a group acting on the space of theory, which is called renormalization group. Okay. So let's go back to phi 4. So the phi 4 theory at the classical level is just given by an action, which is integral e dx, 1/2 of e phi squared mu plus m squared over 2 phi squared plus g divided by phi 4. And that's the action which gives the perturbation theory, Feynman expansion in Feynman diagrams and Feynman amplitudes, etc., etc. But, and so we have seen that mass is renormalized, and so we have seen that the irreducible two-point function, if you have an incoming momentum p, is given by p squared plus m squared plus g divided by 2 times the amplitude of this diagram. And we have seen that the irreducible four-point function, if you have four momenta, is this diagram, which is contributed by a factor g, plus the contribution of z diagram, plus you have three independent diagrams that depends on the channel. So if you have p1, p2, p3, p4, these diagrams depend on p equal p1 plus p2. And you have a factor minus g divided by minus g squared, and you have a symmetry factor of 1/3 for each diagram. That's, so of course, these are truncated or amputated legs. So this is just the coupling constant, the contribution of the single vertex. Okay, and so on. And that's, of course, plus higher order in g squared, or here in G cube, I remind you that expanding in G is the same thing as expanding in H bar. So this is in fact a semi-classical expansion. Okay. And we have seen that this corresponds in fact to the physical mass of the theory at that order. So this is the physical mass squared of the theory at order or H bar. So this is a radiative correction to the mass. So, as I said, I'm going to discuss the massless theory for two reasons. First, it's simple. So, I'm going to consider a theory where mass, the physical mass, is zero. So first, that's because it's simple. It's simpler. But second, it's because the theory with a massless theory with a physical mass equal zero has some very interesting feature. It has a feature of scale invariance at the classical level. Okay. Oh, finally, of course, I'm going to discuss everything in dimension of space-time equal 4. So 1 time 4 is 1 plus 3. So that's one dimension of time and 3 dimensions of space. But I'm also going to discuss this, everything in Euclidean, in an Euclidean framework, because in fact the structure of ultraviolet singularities, this is the same in Euclidean and in the Lorentzian geometry, or in Minkowski space, or in Euclidean space. We are interested in what's happening at very high energy or very short distances, and basically the math are the same. Okay, so let me go back for a few minutes on what's peculiar to the theory when the mass is zero. So let's consider a classical massless theory. Then the action is, of course, simply, and I'm going to work in four dimensions, 1/2 of d mu phi squared plus g divided by factorial 4, phi to the 4. And a bit you just do dimensional analysis. So this is the action, and if you do some dimensional analysis, the action must be something dimensionless. We have set h bar equal 1, so in unit of h bar, the action is dimensionless. X has dimension of a length to the power 1, of course, so x, the dimension of x is a length, L. The derivative d mu, of course, has dimension of a length minus 1, and the action S must have dimension of a length to the power 0. It's a pure number expressed. So this means that first, phi, the field phi, must have the dimension of a length minus 1 in 4 dimensions. You see? Well, in D dimension, this is replaced by D. So it should have the dimension of a length to the power minus D plus 2 divided by 2 in D dimensions. This is just in order for the first term to have dimension 0 of length. Now, once you have set that, you have to look at the dimension of the coupling constant. And the dimension of the coupling constant then has to be the dimension of length. And which power is it? It has to have the dimension of, it has to be, you must have the dimension, minus the dimension of x squared times phi squared. But phi has the inverse dimension of x. So it g has a dimension length 0 in 4 dimension, and it has dimension of a length to the power minus d, so then this is replaced by a d, plus 4 in d dimensions. Let's see. So you see that something very particular happens in 4 dimensions. The coupling constant has a dimension 0. It's a pure number, in fact. So.
Sorry, but in d dimension, I think the dimension is round. It's not. It's more complicated.
Yeah, no, because, you're right. This is, because you have the dimension, yes. This is a standard error that I'm making every time. So I think it turns out that it is 4 minus d. Because here you have minus 4, minus 4 times 2 minus d divided by 2. So you get, minus d, sorry. So you get d minus 4. Thank you. That's important. I know it's d minus 4, but I never remember which sign it's, well, it's very important. Okay. So this is the important result. In 4 dimensions, the dimension of the coupling constant is 0. And this has a very important consequence. It means that if you consider an arbitrary field configuration phi of x, and you rescale it, so that's, for instance, so you have a field configuration like that, a function of x, and you rescale it so that it becomes something like that. See, you rescale by a factor lambda, so that you get a new field configuration, which is phi of x divided by lambda, and 1 over lambda. One over lambda, or is it lambda? Well, we can check easily. Yeah, if you do this. So you rescale the distance, and you squash the field. So this is defined, this is just a scale transformation on the distance and on the field according to the dimension of x and the dimension of the field phi. Then this means that the action of this field configuration is exactly equal to the actions of this rescaled configuration. See, for any configuration, you don't need to use the equation of motion, the classical equation of motion, to show this symmetry. So this is a real global symmetry of the classical theory. Okay. In fact, it's a symmetry, it's a space-time symmetry, which adds up to the translation and rotation symmetry. So in addition to having Euclidean symmetry, you have this scale symmetry, the scale invariance. And the true is going to be true, of course, also for the theory at real time. In addition to Poincaré, you have the scale symmetry. So the group of symmetry of the C, of space-time symmetry, is enlarged. And that's going to be important. In fact, it turns out that you have, in addition, the symmetry under inversions of spacetime. So you can, in addition, not only change x into x divided by lambda if you want, but you can change x into 1 over x. That's a bit more involved, well, or more or less if you prefer. X divided by the modulus of square, this is a vector, which consists in inversions with respect to the center. And this gives a big group of the group of what so-called conformal transformation under the symmetry, which plays a very important role in both statistical mechanics and in high energy physics. So I am sure you have already heard about conformal invariant theory. Okay, but I'm going just to discuss that. Okay, so let's go back to our perturbation theory. Okay.
The inversion symmetry, should it have a negative sign?
Pardon?
The inversion symmetry,
yes.
X goes to X divided by X mod square.
Yes.
Should it have a minus sign?
I don't think so. Well, changing x at minus x is just the ordinary inversion, so it's part of the Euclidean symmetry.
Okay. Yeah.
So changing x into minus x is just a combination of the two. So standard inversion are just that. You have the origin, and if you have a point here, so this is a unit disk, and if you have a point here, you send it here by taking an inversion with respect to this.
But sorry, I don't see why it is an inversion.
Pardon?
I don't see why it is an inversion.
It's called the inversion in mathematics. It's called inverting a point with respect to a circle. So it's called inversion with respect to a circle. Okay, that's a mathematical name from that. Okay, but I'm not going to discuss conformal symmetry here. But I think you will have some more advanced course if you are interested in, if you go toward high energy physics, well, you will have a lecture on conformal symmetries.
So I have a question for the
yes?
inversion. Do we really have the inversion symmetry in conformal symmetry?
In the classical theory, in the classical theory, yes. But you have to transform the field in a different way.
Yes, I mean, in the class we have the special transformation. That special
yes.
transformation is the translation of the inverse of x, translation of 1 over x.
Yes.
But I think we don't have it.
Well, you have it if you transform the field accordingly. But I don't want to treat that, so I prefer not to discuss that. Maybe
okay.
I shouldn't have mentioned here. Here I'm just going to discuss this and this.
Okay.
Okay, so. Right. Okay. So we have seen that. Let's go back to the mass renormalization. So we have seen that the physical mass of the theory is the squared of the mass here plus g over 2 times the integral of this tadpole graph. See? Where T of m of lambda is just the integral d4k over 2 pi to the power k, 1 over k squared plus m squared for the momentum k less or equal to this lambda, because I've introduced an ultraviolet momentum cutoff. We have seen that the theory doesn't make sense if you just do, you know, blindly perturbative calculation in the theory with a continuous spacetime. Okay. And we have, you see that here, in four dimensions, this is an integral which at large k is quadratically divergent. So it diverges at d 4k over k squared. So you expect that you are going to have a divergence proportional to lambda squared. And well, this integral you can perform. It can be performed. You go to radial coordinates, you integrate over the three, you know, the three cylindrical, the spherical coordinate over k, and then you integrate over the modulus of k. That's an exercise, and what you find is the coefficient is 1 over 4 pi squared. Okay? Then you may say, okay, I might be worried because beyond that, if for instance I expand 1 over k squared plus m squared into one over k squared minus one over minus m squared divided by k to the four. I expand in m. I consider that k is much, much larger than m. Therefore, I can consider m as a small parameter and expand in m. You see that the correction in m squared as a logarithmic divergence, d4k divided by k squared. So in fact, and you can do the calculation, and you found that there is an additional term, which is precisely minus m squared. Well, it turns out that the coefficient is the same. It's 1 over 4 pi squared. But then there is a log. So there is a log of lambda. Okay, and since this integral, in fact, depends only on n and on lambda, this can be only a log of lambda squared divided by m squared. And then you have higher order terms, which are of order m squared. Well, the higher order terms will be terms of the form m4 divided by lambda squared plus et cetera, plus et cetera. So these are terms which goes to zero when lambda goes to zero. Okay. So we are just interested when discussing the ultraviolet divergence, we are just interested in this leading so-called quadratic divergence. And this logarithmic divergence. Okay. But so you see that if you want to quantize the theory so that the mass of the theory, the physical mass of the particle of the theory, is finite, you shouldn't start from an action with m squared equals zero in the original action. You shouldn't start from a classical massless action, because otherwise you have this correction to the mass, which is a big lambda squared term. That's a quadratic divergence. So the physical mass is huge. It's of the order of the cutoff. You should start from an action in where you have a mass parameter m squared, which can be, in some sense, canceled by t. Yes?
How did we get a log from integrating 1 over k to the fourth?
Integrating d, OK, it's an easy calculation. You integrate d4k over 4 pi squared 1 over, this is of course a modulus of k to the 4. And you integrate for momentum of k less than lambda. So you can consider that k, this is a vector, remember, k. It's a 4 vector. It's a unit vector times the modulus of k. And you can make the change of variable. So you can express u in terms of spherical coordinates, for instance. Because u is a unit vector, so it belongs to S2, the two-dimensional sphere, so the unit sphere in 3 dimensions. In 4 dimensions, I'm sorry, that's E3, so it's something which is the 3-dimensional sphere. So it's more than hyper spherical coordinates. Okay. And if you do that, you get an integral of a du on the 3-dimensional sphere times integral of a modulus of k. But then, of course, this is change of variable, you have a factor k3. And then you have divided by k to the 4. And you integrate over k from 0 to lambda. So now you either you do your calculation and you open your textbook and you find that this is the volume of the 3-dimensional sphere. So this gives the factor 1 over 4 pi squared. Okay. This is 4 pi to the power 4, I think. So that when you divide by 1 over 4 pi squared, you get 1 over 4 pi squared. No, I'm sorry. This is a unit volume, so it's something. Okay, so it's some number. That's because it's 4 pi 4. So it's 4 pi
it's, 2
squared.
2 pi to the 4 in the first integral. 2 pi to the 4.
No, because I'm integrating.
I'm saying the line above.
Here?
Where you wrote 4 pi to the
four. Yes. Yeah. So it's some volume. I will make some mistakes. I have the notes here. But so you have the volume of. Right? So finally, and now this is an integral you know how to deal it. This integral from 0 to lambda of dk divided by k. So this integral is just gives a log of lambda. I'm not interested in what's happening here, of course. You may object that at zero there is also a divergence. So you have to treat. I'm just interested in what's happening for large k. So you get the log of lambda for this one. And here for this one, you get the volume of S3 divided by 4 pi to the 4, by 2 pi to the 4. And you get this factor. That's how you get the log lambda. Okay. So let me go back to this one. So what I was explaining was that if you want to construct a theory with a physical mass which is equal to zero, you must not start from the action of a classical massless theory. Because if you start from a classical theory which is massless because of the radiative corrections, the mass of the theory, once you have quantized it, will be at least at one loop, very large and of the order of the cutoff squared. So that exemplifies the basic idea of renormalization. You must consider that the path integral is just a tool. It's both a representation, but it's a tool to construct a quantum field theory. It's a tool to construct the correlation functions, the Green's function of a quantum field theory, and out of the Green's function of the quantum field theory, you can reconstruct the Hilbert space and the states and the one particle state, the two particle states, the scattering matrix element of the theory. Okay. So if you think, or if you believe, but that's what we are going to show, is that path integral is a good tool to construct, a good mathematical tool to construct a quantum field theory, you must start from an action, but you don't know a priori what is the action. You have to take an action which allows you to construct the sensible quantum field theory. So idea, the principle, renormalized action in the functional integral. Okay. And the simplest idea is just to take the classical action, but change the parameter. So take a renormalized action, which is a function of the quantum field, which is of the form d4x. I'm going to have a d mu phi square term, a phi square term, and a phi 4 term. But let's have arbitrary parameters. So let's use a parameter here, capital A divided by 2, a mass squared parameter that I'm going to denote capital B divided by 2, and the coupling constant parameter that I'm going to write capital C divided by factorial 4. Okay? And use the functional integral of the form integral functional exponential of minus s renormalized of phi to build out the green functions. So for instance, if you use this functional integral, you are going to compute Green's function phi of z1 up to phi of zn in the renormalized action. Okay. Again, I've set h bar equals 1. And I'm in the Euclidean space-time setting. But the argument do not depend on Euclidean. Okay, on this. Okay. And so, if you do that, well, first, I'm not going to consider this term because it's not useful. So I'm going to consider that A equal 1. The first kinetic term, the term involving derivative, is just the ordinary term. It makes sense at one loop. Okay. But then, of course, the two-point function is given by this quantity, but you replace m squared by b. So now, with such a theory, the physical mass squared is the coefficient b plus, now the coupling constant is this parameter c, 1/2 of t of b and lambda. So it's c times 1/2 of one over 4 pi squared lambda squared. This doesn't depend on the parameter. Minus b divided by 4 pi squared log of lambda squared divided by b plus negligible terms. Okay. And you want that, all what you want if you want a physical mass, you want that this is zero at order g. Remember, we are working at one loop order. So then, of course, at the classical order, when g equals 0, the mass physical is equal to b. So what you have to choose is that b is equal to 1. B is equal to 0 at leading order plus something of order g. You see? And what do you have to take? Well, that's easy. You just take that b is 0 plus something which cancels this. So if you take, let me write, I'm going to consider that c equal the Kuplik constant plus the correction that I do not yet know, I can take b equal 0 minus g 1/2 1 over 4 pi squared lambda squared. That's enough. This is enough. So this choice gives a theory with a physical mass equal 0. Because then, at order 0 in G, you get 0. At first order, you get minus G times this divergent term, plus G times this divergent term. And you may ask, aha, but B is non-zero anymore. B is non-zero, indeed. It's of order lambda squared. But B is of order G. So this term is a term of order times, it's a term of order G times a term of order G. So this term is a term of order G squared. Then this term is of order G squared. And we are working only at order G. No. Making the mass finite and zero at order G squared is something more complicated. Okay, so that's enough. So this works. Okay, so by introducing this, changing B, what we have done is that we have performed an operation of renormalization of mass. We have introduced a mass counter term. We have changed the action. This term is called a mass counter term. And we have changed the action into a renormalized action so that the physical mass of the theory is 0. Yes?
Do we want the physical mass to be 0? Because we started from a mass.
That's my choice. OK? One can, afterwards, construct along the same line a theory with a physical mass which is different from 0, but which is finite in terms of the cutoff, which doesn't contain any lambda squared term. That's the next step. But at the moment, I'm just interested in considering a massless theory because that's the simplest case. And one has to consider it. Yes?
Where did the minus sign and the B come from?
The minus sign comes from the fact that I want this plus this. I want this plus this to be finite when lambda goes to infinity, and in addition, equal to 0. So here there is a plus sign, so B has to be negative. You see?
So now our original, quote unquote, original theory, like our bare mass, quote unquote, is not zero.
No? Yes, of course.
The original theory now is not scale invariant, but the resulting theory.
No, but what we're interested in having a quantum theory scale invariant. What we want is M physical equals zero. Implies quantum theory possibly. At that stage of the calculation, the quantum theory is scale invariant because the two-point function is scale invariant. It's just p squared. Well, the irreducible p squared. So the propagator is still 1/p². It's just the green function of the free scalar field, massless scalar field. Okay. So we are done for the two-point function. So now, of course, we have to consider the four-point function and whether we need a renormalization of the coupling constant. So the question is, we have set C equal to G at order 1, but we want to deal at the leading order, so the question is, do we need a coupling constant renormalization? Okay. And while I work that here, the irreducible four-point function is given by G minus g squared over 2 times those bubble diagram, one loop diagram. So we have to consider the study the radiative correction for the coupling constant induced by this graph. So let me call this graph the graph B. It depends on internal moment, incoming momentum P, like P. So which is in fact a truncated diagram like that. So it's a function of P, right? P equal P1 plus P2. We are in the U channel, okay? But now it depends also on the cutoff. And at that order, we can take, so it's given by integral over d4k over 2 pi to the power 4, 1 over k squared times 1 over p plus k squared for momentum k less than lambda. Okay. So you may object that since we are dealing with a theory with a mass counter term, there should be a mass here. So that's a propagator for the theory with the mass counter term. But the mass counter term is over the G. So we can set in this, we can replace the propagator 1 over k squared plus b. We can replace it by k squared because b is over the G. So this is a diagram which is over the g squared. So taking into account b is a correction over the g cube, which implies this is a correction of order g cube in the expression of the four-point function, because the four-point function, this diagram is multiplied by g squared. Okay. So we can just consider this quantity. Okay. And now you see that you are interested in what's happening. Is this diagram finite or singular when the cutoff is large? Yes?
I thought B is like minus G by 2.
Pardon?
B is like that, minus G by 2. 1.4 pi squared square root 2 under g.
Pardon?
It ought to be to the power to the order g is that expression.
This one?
Yeah.
It's of order g.
Yes. B is not zero to the order g, right?
No, B is zero at classical order, and it's so and there is a correction of order g.
Right.
So if you replace, so you have to consider in fact this bubble diagram with a propagator 1/k² + b, but at leading order in the coupling constant, you can replace 1/k² + b by 1/k². That's all, just what I say. Because you can replace that 1/k² - g, well, this factor lambda squared is 1/k² plus 1/k⁴ g lambda squared plus ta 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 ta. You see? And so you get a term with a higher order in g. And in addition, you get instead of a 1/k², you get a term of order 1/k⁴, which is well behaved in the ultraviolet. So we are on safe ground. Okay.
Sorry.
Yes.
Could you please explain again the last expression?
This one?
Yeah. No, the last thing that you wrote.
This one?
Yeah.
No, I'm just arguing that. Since I'm working now, I want to compute the four-point function at order g squared. So I have to compute the Feynman integral associated to this diagram, which in the theory given by an action like that, we start from a theory which has a mass term, because it has a mass counter term. So I should evaluate this diagram with propagator here 1/k² + b and here 1/p + k² + b. But since I'm expanding in the coupling constant, I can replace b by zero because at first order, at leading order in the coupling constant, at order zero, b is zero. And so the correction here, the counter term, will play a role if we push the calculation at order g to the cube. And that's not what we are doing. We want to evaluate the four-point function at order g squared. Keep only the one-loop contribution of the one-loop diagram. Okay. And so finally, let's before the break, let's say that you see that this diagram, this integral, behaves for very large k when k is of order lambda, and again, lambda is much smaller than, so when the cutoff is much, much larger than the momentum here involved here, in the incoming momentum, p, then this integral behaves like d4k over k to the 4, which is the integral we have studied there, or there. So it's diverged like a log of lambda. So these integrals diverge like a log of lambda. Or if you prefer a log of lambda squared. So the radiative correction to the coupling constant has ultraviolet divergence. So let's do the break now and after the break. So in 5 minutes, I'm going to discuss and how to perform the renormalization to take care of this problem and to have a theory which has a finite physical coupling constant. And then we are going to see what are the consequences of this coupling constant renormalization. Okay. So let's have the break. Yes?
So it seems like every time we're going, so we start at 2.4, we need to renormalize.
Yes.
So now we're doing a 4.5.
Yeah.
For the other?
I'm going to show that this stops there at one loop, because the 6-point function is well behaved.
Okay.
Fortunately, and that's because, well, this reflects the fact that the theory is renormalizable.
Okay.
If you have a theory like where you have an, you know, you have a much more, many more divergent correlation function and many more, then the theory is said to be non-renormalizable. And usually it means that it's badly behaved and it doesn't exist.
Okay. I was just wondering also, like, we're saying A equals 1, so
yes.
The connector. Why is this sensible at, like, one loop versus?
Well, this A, we can set A equals 0, because when you compute the 2-point function, the 2-point function for phi 4, you have an incoming momentum P. It doesn't depend on P, so the divergence is just in lambda squared. It's independent of the momentum. So you don't have to take care about whether the wave, so it corresponds to whether the wave function has to be renormalized or the field has to be renormalized. No field normalization. So that's for phi 4. In QED, which is the example that you have studied in QFT1, the 2-point function for the electron is given by this diagram. Of course, well, if you don't pay attention to the spin or Dirac indices, you can count whether this integral is singular or. And it turns out that this integral has a log lambda times p slash divergence. This means that in the action of the Dirac field, in the psi bar b slash psi term in the action, you must add a counter term of the form. So you have basically 1 in the action. Then you have to add a counter term of the form E squared, because you have an E for each vertex. E squared log lambda. So here, you have to perform you have to introduce a counter term for the derivative term of the field. So that's what is called a field or wave function of the electron in the one particle theory of Dirac renormalization. So it's a peculiar feature of the phi 4 theory that at one loop, the 2-point function, the divergence of the 2-point function doesn't involve the momentum. So it's a peculiarity of phi to the 4, but it's only for phi to the 4.
What are we doing with the infrared divergences?
Pardon?
What are we doing with the infrared divergences?
I'm not dealing with possible infrared divergences of the theory, and it turns out that for the phi 4 theory, as long in 4 dimensions, as long as you are interested in correlation functions, so you know, either connected function or irreducible function or off-shell scattering amplitudes, off-shell, you have no problem with infrared divergence. So as long as you work off shell, it's okay. If you are going to work on shell, then you have to treat the infrared divergence. But the problem is decoupled from, it's another problem, and the problem of renormalization. So there is physics involved in the infrared singularities in massless theory,
yeah.
In particular in QED, where they have to be dealt with. Yeah, you have the problem of soft photons, so you can never isolate, say that you have one single electron. But you have to consider that the electron is dressed by soft photons. So you have to introduce an infrared regulator, consider that you consider the scattering amplitude of an electron, which may be surrounded by a cloud of soft photon, but below some certain energy, and integrate out of that, and then you get finite scattering amplitudes. Yes? Yes?
This is the one
yes.
Increases the mass to order, the correction to the mass to order machine.
Yes.
Right. And then compute the correction.
Yes.
This entire thing. And so the first order reset this to zeroth order.
Huh?
To first order.
I'm working at first order in G. So I keep the term of order zero and of the one and of the G. And I stop there. Each time that my calculation gives a term of order G squared, I I truncate the series.
Right. So like if we set negative,
yes, the other one gives high order term and I truncate all my calculation at order G.
Yes, okay. So
Yes.
So the B is going to introduce the third factor of G. So B is more like.
Yeah, do you remember, there you have a vertex, so you're going to have like G squared,
mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have another G here because of the B. The B has a G, and then you're also multiplying the G squared in the vertex.
Okay. Well, okay, let me start. We can discuss after this afternoon, because then you have the other lectures, but don't hesitate and come to me. Okay, so, I erase this calculation, because that's basically what we did. So, I showed that this Feynman amplitude, which is there. So this object is just the Feynman amplitudes of the bubble diagram for the massless theory. And I showed that it's diverse like a log of log lambda. Well, you have to compute the calculation to compute the coefficient. That's not very difficult, but because it's basically the same kind of theory. And what you get is that the four-point function, so this function b of p and lambda, behaves like a log of lambda squared. And the coefficient turns out to be our favorite coefficients. In those calculations, the 1 over 4 pi squared plus subdominant term. When lambda goes to infinity. Okay. But one should think a little bit more. So this is the amplitude of this bubble diagram for a massless theory. So if you think about it in terms of dimensional analysis, this is integral over momenta of 1 over something which is the dimension of momentum square. So this is a pure number. You see? So if it's diverged like log of lambda, this is a log of a momenta. But you know that you cannot define logs of a dimensionful quantity. You don't know what is a log of a meter, or a log of a light year, or a log of a GeV. you know what's the log of 1, log of 2, log of 3. So this has to be the log of lambda squared divided by some other quantity which has a dimension of a momentum. And here, we have no choice. The two quantities which have dimension of the momenta in this integral are lambda and the external momenta. So it has to be lambda squared divided by p squared. And if you do the calculation, you can check that this is indeed the case. You just make the change of variable where k is changed in k divided by the momentum of p. And you compute this integral. And now it's going to be a log of lambda divided by momentum of p. OK, so so you see that the log of lambda is in fact a log of lambda squared divided by p squared. And but of course, as long as p squared is over the 1, it's finite. This is log of lambda squared minus log of p squared. So it's a term over the 1. So well, if you do the calculation again, well, depending on bit of the regularization, you have some constant term. And then you have terms which are of order, the subnum terms are term of order 1 over lambda squared, hence of order p squared divided by lambda squared with some possible logs, etc., which are subdominant. I won't need the constant here, it's just a number. And it depends a bit, it depends on the regularization. But this is universal. It doesn't depend on the kind of regularization we have been using, because it's a log. So you cannot change 1 over 4 pi squared into something else. And you can check that if you do the calculation lattice, and then lambda is 1 over the mesh of the lattice, you get exactly the same coefficient. Or you use some more fancy or sophisticated regularization. So this coefficient is universal. That's important. OK. So now, let's go back to the expression for the four-point function. The four-point function, gamma 4, I denoted gamma 4. It's related by this. So it's given by, now in my renormalized theory, this is given by C minus C squared, 1/2, the symmetric coefficient of those graphs, times this B of P and lambda for the three channel. So if I have momentum P1, P2, P3, P4, this is going to be log of lambda squared divided by P1 plus P2 squared plus the same term, log of lambda squared divided by P1 plus P3 squared plus log of lambda squared divided by P1 plus P4 squared plus 3 times this constant. And that's it. Of course, I got rid of the 2 pi to the power 4 delta of P1 plus P2 plus P3 plus P4. OK, which is just momentum conservation. So you see that plus term. And remember, C at that stage, we take C to be G plus something. So this is for the renormalized theory. The theory obtained by compute using this action. OK, so which actions make these things well-defined? Which renormalized action makes these things well-defined when the cutoff goes to infinity? Well, that's easy. You just have to take a C. So how to make this finite? And lambda goes to infinity. You have to take C, which is equal to G, plus the Cartan term of order G squared, which cancels this, because C squared at order G squared is drawing good, you don't need to, because in C squared, these terms will give a term, this correction, which counter term will give a correction of order G cubed. So you just have to take plus G squared, 1/2 of, well, 3/2 log of lambda squared. And this makes things finite. Okay, so we have a counter term which makes things finite at order G. Okay, so we have a counter term. We have a coupling constant counter term. However, yes?
I understand that if we have a G squared, then C squared is going to cancel out.
Yeah.
I don't understand why the factor that we have is 3/2 log of lambda squared.
That's because just replace C by G in this. So you have G plus G squared 3/2 log of lambda squared. It's just my choice. Minus G plus G squared times what I've been introducing squared. 1/2 log of lambda squared divided by p1 plus p2 squared plus this term. Okay, that's just, I'm rewriting this. And you see that here, the log of lambda here, you see first that this is g squared plus something of order g cubed when I expand. And you see that here, the log here cancels the log here. So you end up with something finite. So this does the jobs. So this choice, this does the job. Okay. However, we have the same issue than here. The log of a momentum doesn't make sense. You have to take the log of the momentum divided by some momentum, some other momentum. But it cannot be the momenta here, p1 and p2, because we don't want the action to depend on the external momenta. So in other words, we don't want to take an action which depends on which correlation function we compute. Otherwise, we are not doing physics. We don't start from a fundamental theory and deduce consequence. So we cannot have it. So the point, very important point, is that we must introduce a new momentum scale. Let us denote it mu and divide it lambda squared by mu squared. So this new momentum scale is called a renormalization scale. Yes?
Why in this case we couldn't use the external momenta, but for the bubbles we use the external momenta?
No, for the bubble, is a graph that appears when you compute scattering amplitudes with particles with given momenta. So it has to depend on the external momenta.
Okay.
Because, of course, you know, the scattering amplitude and the scattering probabilities. When you scatter, you have a collision between two particles. It depends on the respective momenta. It depends on the angles between the. It depends both on the energy and on the impact parameter and of the angles. So they of course, this gives the scatter, physical quantities. So they depend on the external momenta of the particle. But the counter terms must not depend on them because they are just parameters of the fundamental theory we start from to compute scattering amplitudes. You see? Okay, so this is going to seem a bit arbitrary, but I'm going to show that this is not that arbitrary at all. And if we do the job, well, if we introduce that, we end up with just the fact that my renormalized four-point function, which is this object, is just the coupling constant G and then I get minus G squared 1 over 2. Oh, I forgot the 1 over 4 pi squared. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, everywhere there is a 1 over 4 pi squared. Because the amplitude has a 1 over 4 pi squared. Plus 1 half, 1 over 4 pi squared. And when I consider what is log of lambda squared divided by p1 plus p2 minus log of lambda squared divided by mu, now I introduce this divided by mu. Of course, what I get is that log of p1 plus p2 squared, the original, plus, if you prefer. Well, let me write it in this way. I get mu squared divided by p1 plus p2 squared. Sorry, messy. Plus the symmetric terms for the two other channel, plus terms over the G cube. And so this is finite. Both. And we have the log of a dimensionless quantity. Yes? Yes?
So this mu is a renormalization scale, right?
Why?
The mu is a renormalization scale.
The mu is the renormalization scale. So that's a parameter that at that level where I'm just doing calculation, I'm manipulating integrals and actions, it's just a mathematical object.
To this log, the log of lambda, we had to integrate 1 over k.
Yes.
Right, from 0 to lambda.
No.
From mu to lambda is the, my question is, because if we integrate 1 over k from 0 to lambda, we get a divergent result. Right, because 1 over k diverges, right? When you
You mean at high momenta? No, if you integrate from 0 to mu, it's finite. It's when k is large that it's diverged.
1 over k diverges close to the origin and far away from it.
But d4k over k squared doesn't diverge at the origin.
Oh, yeah, but we got this log exactly because we had the d4k times 1 over k to the fourth. And then we got 1 over k that we integrated dk. Right.
No, I don't think so. Because you have you are at the external momenta are non-zero. So you never have 1 over k d4k over squared over k d4k over k squared. You always have some, you see, if k equals 0, this is non-zero. If p plus k equals 0, this is non-zero. So you always have a d4k over k squared, which is finite at k equals 0. So do not think of this mu as regulating the integral of k. think of this mu as a parameter. Okay.
So we introduced the mu on this point. We did not need the mu before at all.
No, it's something new that I'm introducing here. Okay. And with that, you get the renormalized four-point function. Okay. Yes?
So we had some choice here about what we subtracted, right? So we decided to just subtract off the divergence.
I subtract this with a mu. I could have subtracted with another mu.
But I mean, like, we could have subtracted, like, what about the constant term that was not unique, right?
No, the constant term depends on the regularization, but once you have chosen a regularization, it's unique.
But this is a, like, there's a difference between, like, this is called minimal subtraction or something?
Yeah, for minimal subtraction, this number is something, I think it's a Euler gamma number, maybe not, I don't remember, because there is the Euler, there is a minimal subtraction scheme, and the modified minimal subtraction scheme. So, well, that's technical. So, if you have not heard about it, forget what he says, but we can discuss that. But this term is not going to be important because you can recast this term in the definition of mu.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So forget about it. You can use a realization when it is zero. It can be set. Zero. Yes.
So we've been carrying the lambda everywhere, but now we don't have it.
No.
So it is like we have got the.
We have a theory which has a finite limit when lambda goes to zero. So we have a theory which has a finite continuum space-time limit. Okay. It is finite when lambda goes to infinity. So that's a sensible procedure to get rid of the regularization. Okay, but now we have this mu, which seems arbitrary. It seems that in order to define a renormalized theory, finite, we have to introduce a new parameter in the theory. And now I'm going to end this lecture, I have still 10 minutes, to explain to you why, what is this mu? What is this mu? More exactly, what does this mu corresponds to? And in order to understand what it is, what does this correspond to, you have to think about just what irreducible two-particle, you know, four-particle functions are useful for. They are useful to define scattering amplitudes, for instance. Or theory and scattering both amplitudes and therefore scattering probabilities. In terms of the momenta in the theory. And that's how, if you have a theory of particle interaction, that's how you measure the parameter which measures the strength of the interaction. So scattering amplitudes, that's how you measure in the sense of physical measure, you know, the couplings. For the theory. How do you, well, for instance, in QED, the coupling is the charge of the electron. How do you measure the charge of the electron? You put an electron in an electromagnetic field and you see how it interacts with the electromagnetic field. So if you think about it in terms of high energy physics and QED, you scatter an electron with a photon. So you do a scattering experiment of a photon with an electron. So that's what you do when you use, for instance, the photoelectric effect. But if you think just of an electron deflected by a magnetic field or by an electric field, it can be viewed as a scattering of an electron with a photon, but it's a virtual photon. It's a photon with a momentum which is not on shell because it's a classical field. But see, it still is given by the same kind of Feynman graph. So in QED, what you are doing is this. Here, what we are doing is this. We have two particles and they scatter. And we compute the radiative corrections, which for pi 4 are given by this, and which for QED are given, for instance, by this kind of process. In both cases, we are measuring the coupling of the theory in experiment in a regime where you can test the radiative corrections. And we have to take them into account to define what is the coupling of the theory. And then, of course, well, in an experiment, you never measure a Feynman diagram. You never measure what is the action of the theory in a functional integral, because this would require making experiment at the scale of the ultraviolet cutoff. And precisely, we have sent the ultraviolet cutoff to infinity. So what you are doing in experiment is that you are making experiments at a given energy scale for the particle you end up, you see. And here we are dealing with a theory of massless bosons, because phi 4 is a theory of interacting bosons via point repulsive interaction, but we are interested in the massless theory. So you have no preference energy scale, you see. In QED, you have a natural energy scale, which is the rest energy or the mass of the electron. And after all, when you are doing experiment in classical electrodynamics, you have currents and you measure how currents are affected by electric and magnetic fields. You are measuring everything in your lab on your tabletop experiment at an energy scale, which where somewhere the energy scale is the mass of the electron. In a massless boson, you don't have to do that. So you have to do experiments at a given energy scale E, and you have to compare what are the results of your experiments when the energy scales vary. So if you make experiment at some energy scale A, you measure something and you get some value of the coupling, G of E. Coupling measured at energy E. But now you could perform the experiment at a new energy E prime. And there is no reason to see that you obtain the same result. You get a result G prime, which is some function of the energy. So, in fact, if you think about it, there is no reason that the strength of the interaction between particles doesn't depend in a quantum theory of the energy at which you make the measurement. So that's precisely what we are doing here. Mu is the analog of the energy scale at which you perform the measurement. The coupling between the particle is probed. And, well, this is some kind of just, unwaving, but this can be made rigorous, because think about it, you know. We start from the four-point function that we have calculated, you see? And let us choose a reference point in momentum space. see. So I take a reference point in the Mamertine space P1, P2, P3, P4, which is a point where, of course, P1 plus P2 plus P3 equals 0, but that's a point where P1 plus P2 squared equals some energy, P2 plus P3 squared equals the same energy, P1 plus P3, and P1 plus P4 squared equals the same energy, okay? And then let's measure the four-point function, the renormalized four-point function for the p's at this reference point. You see? Well, now I start from my calculation. The theory defined in this way. What I get is that this is, of course, g squared. And then I replace p1 plus p2 by p squared. So what I get is minus g squared, 1/2, 1 over 4 pi squared, times log of e squared, mu squared, divided by e squared, plus higher order terms. You see? So you see that the value of the four-point function as a function of the energy here, you have particles with typical energy E, depends on the energy. So the interaction depends on the energy. And moreover, you see that if you consider the reference energy E to be equal to mu, then log of mu is 0. So you get G if E equal mu. You see? So in fact, there is a relation between G and mu. If you consider a fixed theory, if you consider your theory, the parameter G, which is in the calculation, G is in fact the value, the numerical value of the four-point function of R of the renormalized function, the renormalized theory, for a choice of external momenta, therefore energies, when the PIs chosen at this reference point with energy E equal mu. See? So in fact, choosing mu, you can think about, you can choose, I fix G, and I choose mu. This is equivalent to choose the energy E, where I measure the coupling. So I make an experiment at an energy E. Okay? And this energy E if I denote it mu, then G is the coupling measured at this energy scale mu equal E. So mu is in fact not a new parameter of the theory. Either you consider that G is your parameter and then you can freely choose mu, or you have a theory, you make experiment on a system of particles interacting, you choose the energy at which you make your experiment, so you compute scattering amplitudes. Out of scattering amplitude via the, you know, the standard formalism, LSZ, reduction formula, you have an estimate of what the irreducible four-point functions are in your theory. And you take the value, well, some value of the, some specific value at some specific point where the momenta are of order of the energy, and you define this to be the coupling constant. See? So for that reason, and let me end up there, and we'll discuss that tomorrow, then we'll discuss renormalization group, what this means. In fact, we should consider that G, we shall rename, denote it, GR, which is called a renormalized coupling constant. See? So in all these formula, you can replace A and B par this parameter GR. So then, which means that in the action, you have A equal 1, B equal 0 minus GR 1/2 1 over 4 pi squared lambda squared, C equal G renormalized, and where was my formula here? Minus plus GR squared 3/2 1 over 4 pi squared log of lambda squared divided by mu squared. Okay, so that's your parameter of this renormalized action. And you see that in this formula, you can change mu and simultaneously change GR so that C doesn't change. So you can change simultaneously GR and mu equals the E, the energy scale, at which you measure the coupling constant, so that C does not change. And if C doesn't change, it means that the renormalized action you started from to compute correlation function do not change. Therefore, correlation function phi of Z1 phi of Zn in the renormalization do not change. The scattering amplitudes do not change. So you are always dealing with the same theory. So the arbitrariness, the seemingly arbitrariness in the renormalization procedure doesn't mean that you can define the coupling constant as the strength of the interaction measured at a given energy. And at different energy correspond different effective coupling constant, renormalized theory. Okay. So I'll stop there. And tomorrow, we are going to see what are the very important consequences of this feature of quantum field theory. So you see that this is a feature of quantum field theory that comes from the fact that we must renormalize the theory in order to define finite correlation functions and finite scattering amplitudes. Okay? So from this important feature of renormalization in a quantum field theory, we are going to see that what I mentioned later, that the coupling constant, the effective coupling constant, depends on the energy. I hope I get already a hint of what this means. So the effective coupling, you have effective running couplings with the energy. And you are going to see that all this running can be encoded in what's called renormalization group flow. So-called renormalization beta function, etc., which are going to be useful in the rest of the lecture, and which are a necessary feature and also important in statistical mechanics. So, see you tomorrow. Thank you.